Welcome to Insta Poetic Justice, the first podcast of its kind discussing the ever-evolving terrain of poetry and technology and how these two have merged together to create the subgenre that is Insta Poetry. Here I will interview poets about poets as we weigh in on the positives and negatives of this new literary phenomenon. I'm your host, Amy Sophia Mayer. You can check out my poetry books at www.paganpoetess.com. Supporting me via my published works is the best way to ensure all these podcasts remain free and accessible to everyone. And now, on with the show. Welcome back, poetry lovers. This is another episode of Insta Poetic Justice. Today, I am joined by the poet Afrin. Hey, Afrin.
Hi.
Some of you may know Afrin on Instagram, aka Writings by AA. As always, her info will be in the description box of this episode so you can check out her latest poetry works. So, are you ready, Afrin?
I'm ready.
Wonderful. And again, thank you so much for joining me for my little poetry podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And I remember when I found you, you know, I look up, you know, there are certain poets I get from certain anthologies. There are some well-known poets that I interviewed. But I found you literally by doing the hashtag InstaPoetry exercise, where I was just looking up random poems with the hashtag InstaPoetry. And I found your works, and you only had 25 followers. But I saw your work, and I'm like, oh my God, she's so good. I want her on my podcast. So first of all, again, just give us a little bit, you know, just about your background, like, you know, where are you from? Like, what do you do outside of poetry? Just give us a little description of who is Afrin.
Of course. So I'm actually Indian, but I've been living outside India almost all my life. I first started writing poetry for school because, you know, we used to have these English literature tasks to write poetry on, and they would give us the topic. And when I started writing poetry first, I actually used to write it on a framework with certain rhyming scheme, and I had a very strict framework in my mind. But over time, like, I've started to write more poetry, I've started to develop it to my own style. Outside of poetry, I'm actually in school, and I'm doing my IGCSE year, so it's pretty busy. But I still find the time to write because it's just a way for me to let my feelings out.
Yeah, of course, wonderful. And you know, I'm just curious, you know, I saw all your, you know, your poems are written in English, and, you know, I know from my study of linguistics that India has a vast linguistic, you know, map. There's hundreds and hundreds of diverse languages. Yeah. So what is your mother tongue? Like, which Indian language?
My mother tongue is actually Hindi, but I would say I'm more confident in English because growing up, I've been in English medium schools, but it's actually, Originally it's Hindi.
Okay, so Hindi, yeah. Like, you know, the stereotypical answer, you know, people just think, oh, India, they must speak Hindi. But again, I know how many hundreds of languages there are, and that's so I did not want to presume.
Yeah, thank you very much for that, because people always think I speak Hindi.
Yeah, which again, Hindi is a common, like, lingua franca of India, but it's not the only thing there.
Yeah.
So, you know, from that, I'm just curious, like, even though you said you feel more comfortable in English, is there ever any poetry that you do write in Hindi?
No, honestly, my Hindi is terrible. My grammar is all over the place. So I just try not to go in there. And my thoughts are always organized in English. So I guess I just stick to English.
Okay. Alrighty then. Again, I was just curious. And so, like, you know, you just started your Instagram page recently. Like, what are your general, like, ambitions? Are you just thinking of it as a hobby of, you know, I'll just write poems whenever I want? Or, like, do you ever think you'll want to, like, publish an entire, like, poetry collection one day?
Yeah, I was actually very nervous about bringing it onto Instagram as well. But over time, I realized that I want my poetry to be out in the world. So, yes, after I started posting on Instagram, after I started getting that little bit of attention from my friends who follow my page, I've realized that I do want to write a poetry collection. And someday I will.
Okay, wonderful. Do you have any idea what themes that poetry collection might cover or what it might look like?
I want this to be in themes because there are very specific themes that I write about. I don't write about all the feelings. I just usually write about love or sadness or getting out of toxic relationships and friendships. So it's very, my poetry sticks to certain themes. So my poetry collections will probably also stick to certain themes that I usually write about.
Okay, wonderful. And so for you, how long on average does it take you to write a poem?
I usually scribble down my poems in about 2 minutes when I have this very intense feeling and I can't really take it out any other way. But if I really sit down to think of it, then about 5 to 10 minutes if I want it to be really good and I'm editing and all of that.
Mm-hmm. Like, is it sort of spur the moment of like when you write it down and after that, those few minutes, like that's it? Or do you ever go back to revise it to think if could anything possibly be better? Or is it just spur of the moment?
No, currently I do not edit my poetry. I believe that when I write poetry, I have this intense feeling in me that I take it out. So at that point, it's very pure. So I try not to edit my poetry.
Okay. So you're definitely more of, you know, the emotion, you know, dominates and you want to keep that, you know, original feeling intact.
Definitely, yes.
Okay, wonderful. So tell me, what was an early experience in your life where you realized that language had power?
When I started losing friends, I would say. High school started and we all know how difficult it is to be a teenager sometimes. And I started losing friends because I wasn't putting in effort or my friendships were getting toxic. But either way, I was losing friends and that was for sure. And I found it very difficult to make friends when I moved countries as well. So I think that was when I realized that writing brought me a lot of comfort because if I had no one to talk to about it, if no one understood how I felt, I could just grab a notebook and just write down how I felt. And that has really brought me comfort because, you know, your poetry won't judge you for feeling the way you do. So yeah, it was definitely that.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah, no, I can relate to that to a certain degree because I changed, you know, locations between middle school and high school. And so I actually lived quite far away from my high school. It was a big commute and suck on my time. And because of that, I couldn't really engage with like extracurricular activities or like socialize with other, you know, my peers in the way I would have liked to. So in my way, also writing became sort of a hobby, the type of thing I could do by myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So for your poetry, do you hide any secrets in your poem that maybe only a few people could maybe guess, like the deeper meaning?
Oh, yes, definitely. All the poetry that I write comes from a certain event that happened in my life. It could be about a certain person or just an event, a situation that really made me think. But it's difficult for other people, even for my closest friends, to pinpoint which poetry is about which event or which person. But it's definitely there.
No, yeah, like, you know, I did this a lot, you know, when I was going through a certain traumatic event, but I remember I have one specific poem that if you look at it very closely, you know exactly, you know, anyone in my social circle, like, knows exactly who I'm talking about.
But so, yeah, anyway. It's definitely about certain people or events.
Mm-hmm. So, as you know, you're developing your style and, you know, coming into yourself as a poet. What quality do you wish you had more of in your poetry?
I wish I was able to write longer poems, if that makes sense, because my poetry is usually very, very short. And half the time, it's just two or three sentences. So I wish I could capture whatever I'm feeling or whatever person I'm writing about and made it longer, perhaps use some rhyming words, because I know that sounds really, really good when you read it. But for now, I am pretty happy with the style that I write in.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm kind of the same way. Like, there are some times where I can, you know, think about, I wish I could, you know, because my poems tend to be like between 8 and 15 lines, like stanzas usually. And sometimes I think I wish I could go like a little longer, you know, in my poetry. Like, you know, I look at all these like classic, you know, poetic epics that were written in like the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, and I'm just like, how did they do it
exactly?
But anyway, so yeah, I can relate to that as well. So how about your family? Do they support you in your hobby as a writer?
Yes, they do. They've been very supportive from the very start. They don't really read my poetry because it's just not for them. They don't like poetry, but they've been very supportive about me posting on Instagram. And they really want me to make my own collection as well. So they're very supportive overall.
Oh, that's good. I feel like only recently has my family kind of become supportive, because I think they're so worried, like, I would be the starving artist, if you will.
Yeah,
I get that.
Yeah, but, you know, now that I'm, you know, an adult and, you know, and established, you know, in my career and everything, and I just do this as a hobby, they're like, oh, okay, she's settled. Like, yeah, she can write in her spare time. Like, it was only when, like, there was the danger that I was trying to pursue this, like, full time that they, like, were scared about it.
I understand, yes.
Yeah. So, anyway, so who are your favorite poets and why? You know, and these can either be classical or contemporary or Insta, like, whichever ones. Which ones speak to you?
Definitely Rupi Kaur. She is a great inspiration to me. And I have been, ever since I started writing poetry, I have always admired her poetry, mostly because it really speaks to me when she writes about feminism and she writes about women of color and her struggles overall growing up, dealing with the difficulties in her life, learning to love herself. All of these things, I feel that they really, really speak to me. So I've always been able to relate to her poetry, and she is really an inspiration to me.
Yeah, no, it's nice to see that perspective because, you know, just by doing my research, I know that, you know, one reason Rupi Kaur resonates with so many people because it's especially powerful for women of color, and that, you know, I can see, you know, the feminism themes in her poetry, but as a white woman, I don't get, you know, I can't totally empathize, again, what it's like to be, you know, a woman of color, you know, dealing not only with being, you know, not only being female, but also being, you know, of a darker skin tone. Like, yeah. I only understand a little because my husband is a dark-toned Iranian man, but I will never be able to fully understand. And so it's nice to, you know, hear that from a woman of color about Rupi Kaur.
Yeah.
Okay. Alrighty then. So thank you so much for answering those questions. Would you like to recite a few poems for our listeners?
Of course. Okay. So the first one I wrote it because I was just looking at the world around me and because of the pandemic and everything. So here goes. When the future generations ask me about the year 2020, I'll tell them how I saw places of worship empty, mosques, temples, churches, all abandoned, but how people still prayed at home for safety. I'll tell them about the isolated parks and the very places that saw laughter, completely silent, but how people still found ways to smile at home. I'll tell them how schools shut down and how no one was seen adorning the uniforms anymore, but how students still found ways to carry on learning. I'll tell them how no one could see each other anymore, not even their closest ones, but how contact still remained because relationships aren't defined by distances. I'll tell them about the panic and the worries of the world, but also about how humanity still managed to hope.
Oh, I love that. Very timely for our time. And I'm just curious, you know, obviously you talked about it in your poem, just seeing the isolated spaces, but like overall, how are things in Qatar, you know, because of the pandemic, you know, how is the government handling it? Are people pretty compliant with restrictions? Like what's the scene going on there?
The restrictions were very strict in the start and people, I'm so thankful for this, people actually complied. And I know that in other countries, the restrictions aren't as hard. That is why the cases are surging. But fortunately, in Qatar, we have managed to control the cases, which is why schools are open and malls are open. Almost everything's open.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's, again, you know, it's okay for you to say it. Like, here in the United States, it's been a complete and utter disaster. And specifically where I am in the United States, my region is getting a really bad second wave. And, you know, to the point that I will most likely be working from home. I originally with my job was going to be working from home until February, but that's now been like extended until like June. And yeah, it's just a mess that from an official level, we've been getting mixed messages. And then also like just, you know, there's a certain ethos in America of like, you can't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
And all of these things. And so some people are just being really obnoxious and stupid and reckless. So I'm glad Qatar is not like that. And I wish we could have been like you, where if we just buckled down in the beginning, we could have gone back, life could have gone back to normal sooner.
Yeah, definitely. It's very important that people comply.
Yeah, so your school, like you're in school right now, so did you, you know, are you like going to school physically or is it online or what's going on?
Yeah, we are. Some students chose to do online. We were given the choice. So if you have, for example, a disease that puts you more at a risk, then you can do online, but we're still going.
Okay. Well, that's nice that they like gave you a choice in the matter. Alrighty then. Anyway, sorry to digress. I was just
No
genuinely
problem.
curious about how it was going on in the Gulf. But would you like to read another poem, please?
Of course. So, this one is more about how people's words really, really impact you, especially when they come from someone who you really love. But even when the words in your mouth began to taste like poison rather than the sweet caramel that they used to be, I stayed. So how can I blame you when I broke my own heart?
Oh, I like that. You know, I liked the sort of like surprise. I thought you were going to use honey, but actually you use caramel, and I'm just like, yeah, caramel is more delicious.
Definitely.
No, but I think it's very true because, you know, there's the English saying of sticks and stones will break my bones, but words can never hurt me. And I'm just like, I don't know who thought of that, but that is BS.
Exactly, I do not agree with it.
Like, yeah, no, I do not agree with it again, and especially like within in families and friendships where, you know, a person's opinion really matters to you and they say something stupid or hurtful, it's like it does have an impact.
Definitely, yes.
Yeah. Alrighty, would you like to read your third poem, please?
Of course. In over 15 years of my being, I finally learned that being productive isn't the goal. You need to be happy first. This
Very true.
stems directly from the fact that I cannot go to sleep if I haven't had a productive day, if I haven't done a certain amount of work. And I'm still struggling with it, but I feel the need to be productive every single day, even if it means burning myself out. And I do understand that I have to take self-care days, take breaks, but it's been very, very hard to convince my mind to do that.
Interesting. Yeah, no, my parents are of a similar mentality. They just, you know, that time they see time as the most valuable resource, and if you're not doing something productive with that time, and you know, I've developed that habit to a certain extent, but I'm definitely more willing to claim my right of I can take a break. I know I'm ambitious and productive and responsible. I can take a break if I want to.
But yeah, it's been very hard for me.
Yeah, like, and especially I think a lot of people who feel that way, especially during the pandemic, trying to make themselves feel productive even
Oh,
when their movements
definitely.
are limited.
Yes, definitely. And as someone who goes to school, I feel the need to be productive every single day. The weekend is for me to take a break, but here I am studying, doing homework, and I don't let myself take breaks. And it does lead to, complete burnout because at some point you just can't function anymore and you have a mental breakdown or whatever. But it's just these things still haven't convinced my mind to just let myself take breaks sometimes. But hopefully I will someday.
I'm sure as you get older, you'll see all your comp as you gain more and more accomplishments, you'll be like, I am a smart, productive person. I can take breaks when I want to.
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah, because you know, I kind of got a little bit of burnout because again, when the you know, we basically started, you know, working from home, like sort of shutdowns in the US, you know, started in mid-March and really haven't gone away. And so like for me, it's like, oh, what am I going to do to occupy my time? And I'm like, I'm going to do podcasts. So I just kept adding more and more podcast shows and projects until I finally realized like I can't do all of this. I can only do like two podcast shows at a time.
Yeah, it's very important to know what you can take, what your mind can take, and let yourself take breaks sometimes because otherwise, whatever you're doing, there's no point to any of it because you're not going to do your best.
Alrighty then. Well, thank you so much for sharing those poems with us. I really enjoyed them.
No problem. I'm glad you did.
Okay, and so now we can move on to our discussion of Amanda Lovelace. And as you know, I emailed all of my poet contributors and, you know, asked them like which poets would you want to talk about. So why did you want to talk about Amanda Lovelace with me?
So I got Amanda Lovelace's poetry book, The Princess Saves Herself in This One, for my birthday this year, and it has completely changed my life because, again, like the same with Rupi Kaur, I feel seen because a lot of the things that she talks about, for example, some of her poems are about rape culture, some are about anorexia, and some are about, just not feeling yourself, not feeling like yourself. So all of these things, I felt that they really, really speak to me. So I would love to analyze her poetry. I would love to see things from your point of view. I would love to share my point of view because it's very interesting.
Yeah, no, I like her because actually she shows some she's some representation for my religious minority. I'm a pagan or eclectic witch, and so is she. So I like to see someone of that religious group, you know,
Oh,
gaining
that's
momentum.
great, yeah.
yeah, so it's nice to see that. And then again, same thing. And also, I really, really enjoy, both in poetry and in prose, like I was mentioning on another podcast, within the last decade, there's been a lot of interest in the reimagining of fairy tales, and particularly, giving fairy tales a new feminist twist, because a lot of them in many ways can be quite toxic, whether it's the original fairy tale or maybe the Disneyfied fairy tale.
Definitely.
Like, just, yeah, so I'm glad that, people like Amanda Lovelace and Nikita Gill are, talking about those things.
Yeah.
Okay, so here I have a little paragraph that I copy-pasted, like, just to describe Amanda Lovelace for our listeners.
Okay.
So, growing up a word devourer and avid fairy tale lover, it was only natural that Amanda Lovelace began writing books of her own. And so she did. When she isn't reading or writing, she can be found waiting for pumpkin spice coffee to come back into season and binge-watching Glimmer Girls. The lifelong poetess and storyteller currently lives in New Jersey with her spouse, their bunny cat, and a combined book collection so large it will soon need its own home. She has her BA in English Literature with a minor in Sociology. First collection, The Princess Saves Herself in This One, won the Goodreads Choice Awards for Best Poetry of 2016 and is a USA Today and Publishers Weekly bestseller. So yeah, she's done, she did her trilogy, which was Princess Saves Herself, The Witch Doesn't Burn in This One, and then The Mermaid Doesn't Lose Her Voice?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was basically her Women Are Magic trilogy.
Yes, especially the title spoke to me, because again, like you said, it is really downplaying all of the toxic fairy tale stories that we've had all along.
Mm-hmm. And so I've checked them out at the library, or like looked online and, seen a few of her, a few from that collection. But actually, all of the one book that I do have by Amanda Lovelace is like her newest one, Break Your Glass Slippers.
Okay.
Yeah,
I haven't heard that one yet.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be like another one, because I think, obviously this one is inspired by Cinderella. And then I think the next one, the series that'll come out soon, I don't know exactly when, but it is definitely, I think the next one is about like Hans Christian Andersen's like the Snow Queen. So like it's like the Ice Crown or whatever. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, all of my poems that I picked from her come from this specific collection, Break Your Glass Slipper. And so let me read one of them that I chose, which is on page 8. Let's see. Oh, yes. And it's called She Had to Learn This the Hard Way. There are sisters who see each other as lifelong rivals when they should be seeing each other as lifelong allies. Which is to say, some sisters are no sisters at all.
That's lovely.
Yeah, so I liked it because, again, I think, there are certain... I think it's a big trope in literature when sisters are fighting with each other, and especially if they're fighting like over a man. Like, one book that comes to mind is The Other Boleyn Girl. That's a very famous example in literature. But yeah, I think it's just, again, just our patriarchal culture. They don't, at a subconscious level, they don't want women to like band together and ally with themselves, so just to create a environment where they try to compete with each other.
Definitely. I actually grew up with the ideology that all these women are against me. We're having a sort of rivalry. It's a competition, and it's a competition to see who's the smartest, who's the prettiest, all of that. I grew up with that too, and it's taken me a while to unlearn that and understand that we women aren't here supposed to be against each other. We're here to help each other bloom. And we're here to stand up for each other.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. So would you like to share one of her poems that you chose?
Of course. So this is entitled From The Princess Saves Herself in This One. Sticks and stones never broke my bones, but words made me starve myself until you could see all of them, skin and bone.
Ooh, again, which is interesting that you chose that one, because I was just discussing that, that idiom.
Yeah, definitely. This really spoke to me because, as a teenager, as a teenage girl, I have at some point struggled with eating disorders. I know friends that have struggled with eating disorders. And again, this is the concept of sticks and stones never broke my bones. But words hurt us, all of us, way more than sticks and stones ever could. And the idiom is completely wrong, like we just talked about it.
Yeah, it's yeah, definitely. Again, especially teenage girls, they feel this pressure from magazines, media, all sorts. Like, the media presents a very unrealistic and sometimes borderline unhealthy
Definitely.
version of the human body. And even I, I'm almost 30, and I was a very like thin teenager and young adult, and I've gained a little weight. Like, it's not a lot, but like, I've been pretty good at realizing, I'm not a twiggy teenager anymore. Like, it's natural that I've become more voluptuous, and to like stay at the weight I was would probably be very unhealthy. But even still, I have to remind myself that, gaining weight in this way is a good thing.
Definitely. Positive body image is very, very important for all of us.
Alrighty then. So here, let me read another poem again from the same collection, Break Your Glass Slippers. This one's on page 45. Let's see. Ooh. And it's from like, there's a series in the collection. And it's like Fairy Godmother says,
Okay,
"You
let's
deserve
hear it.
so much more than you're being given. So don't you dare forget to tend to yourself. Take time to sweep your corners, dust off your bookshelves, shake out your rugs, and make your windows shine. Create a safe space for yourself to go when it feels like the whole world has turned against you. It's the only thing you'll ever truly be able to count on."
Okay, that was very interesting.
Yeah, what you make you think of?
I just think it's about having a safe relationship with yourself and having somewhere to go to when, when you have no one. Because at the end of the day, I believe that at the end of the day, we're all alone. So it's very important that we learn to love ourselves and we learn to have a healthy relationship with ourselves and that we understand ourselves and give ourselves breaks from time to time and to just care for our mind and body alike.
Yeah. And I really like that she uses the metaphor of like cleaning, because within connection to Cinderella, because her whole thing is that her stepmother and stepsisters have, forced her into this basically position of servant. But in this particular poem, she's not using the metaphor of cleaning as like suppression. She's seeing it as, just take care of yourself, clean off your bookshelves and all that sort of thing. So I kind of like that, because as I've gotten older, some of the criticism of Cinderella as a fairy tale, from a feminist perspective, I don't wholly agree with, because I think some of the criticisms are very victim blaming, because Cinderella was in a very precarious, position. And so it's quite natural that she wasn't, a certain way or more defiant or more sassy the way we like to see women portrayed as. But
I get you.
yeah. Alrighty then, would you like to share another poem, please?
Okay, so here goes. One morning, I woke up with my favorite wizard boy sheet sticky with the blood I begged would never come. And suddenly, it was like my body was no longer my own, but everyone else's. Not much has changed since then.
Ooh, I really like this one, because I assume it's the idea that, she's like so like she's in quote unquote become a woman in a biological sense. And so because of that, everyone thinks her sexuality and her body is their business now.
Definitely, I agree with you. I see this as her maturing and, becoming an adult and just her body changing. And all of a sudden, everyone looks at you with that lust in their eyes. And I've experienced it myself. I know what it's like to get into teenage and then everyone acts like your body and what you do with it is everyone else's business, but it should never be.
Yeah, and oh, I had a point I was gonna make. What was it? Oh, yeah. No, don't worry, it'll come to me. But yeah, it's just oh, I know what it was. For a long time, I was in my research in my with my master's. I was going to do like a thesis on honor crimes, which is the idea of, when male members of a family will like either physically harm or even kill like their mothers or sisters or daughters because they're perceived to have brought shame for the family. Because again, they feel entitled that, I have a say in what my sister does with her body, and she does something with her body that I don't approve of. I'm entitled to like hurt her or even kill her.
Yes, I know of that.
Yeah. And it's a really truly like terrible thing. And it's like, my sexuality is not about you. Get over it.
Exactly. Our body is our business, no matter what.
Yeah. Alrighty then, here, let me get find another poem. I think one I chose was on page 55. Another one from the Fairy Godmother Says series. Repeat after me. There can never be too much sky. There can never be too many dreams. There can never be too much coffee. There can never be too many stars. There can never be too much me.
Ooh, I don't know what I think of this one.
I liked it. I think I picked it because it's been a while, like several weeks since I chose these poems. I'm pretty sure I liked it because, you know, playing into that type that women are expected to not take up so much space, whether it's in a physical public space or, you know, take up a certain amount of space in a man's life. You know, we're just supposed to be subservient. And so it's, you know, playing into that, you know, screw that ideology. I'm here. We don't say the sky that there is too much sky or there's stars that there are too many stars. Like, you know, I'm here and I'm going to take up space and deal with it, bitch.
Definitely. I agree with you because women are always told to shut up and keep to themselves, keep their opinions to themselves. However, that really needs to stop because we're not too much. We never are. We all have our opinions and we deserve to be able to voice them out.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty then, would you like to share another poem, please?
Okay. I'm pretty sure you have stardust running through those veins. Women are some kind of magic. Then again, the same idea that women are never too much and they are powerful and they are magical. That's what
I think. And that's the titular poem of that whole series, Women Are a Kind of Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, interesting. Alrighty then, here, let me choose another poem. This one on page 89. Let's see. Oh, I love this one. There is nothing unfeminist about the girl who chooses the ball gown and the prince. There is everything unfeminist about those who try to shame her for her choices.
Oh, this one is lovely.
Yeah. I like it because, again, I'm really starting to pay attention to, again, what messages we're sending, like, within feminism of, you know, I think there has been a bit of a backlash of, you know, women who, if women want to be tomboys and, like, genuinely prefer more stereotypically masculine things, you know, that's okay. But at the same time, you know, a woman shouldn't be shamed just because she genuinely enjoys, like, feminine things. And that's, like, you know, to shame a woman for that, that's just another form of sexism because it's showing that masculinity is the default and not seeing femininity as its natural counterpart.
Definitely, I agree, because feminism has all been about denouncing the stereotypes that society has put on us. However, feminism, within feminism, we have new stereotypes that if a woman's a feminist, then she probably hates men, she doesn't want to shave, and she wants to be a tomboy all the time. But that's not true. That's not the case, because feminism is all about just giving women the choice and letting them do what pleases them, what they want to do. That's pretty much all it is.
Yeah, and I think there's within, again, this feminist rhetoric, like there's been a false dichotomy that has been created in the fact that you're either a tomboy, you're either a girly girl, and I just get really tired of it because I just look at myself and it's just like, I am physical, like I can hike 6.7 miles in 2 hours.
Wow.
So I'm very physical, like I do that hike almost every weekend in the summer months with my husband. But also I like to put on, you know, artificial nails and paint them and decorate them for my date night. So like no one can question my love of dresses or makeup or whatever, because I both intellectually, you know, reading books for my podcast, like for fun in my spare time. And then I'm also physically active. So again, very few women are in those, like on opposite sides of the spectrum like that. We're all in the middle where we enjoy masculine and feminine things.
Definitely. Women shouldn't have to feel the need to fit into a certain mold and that mold only, because most of us have many different aspects of both a tomboy and a girly girl in our personalities. It depends on our mood, depends on the time. And it shouldn't be questioned.
Yeah. All right, then. Would you like to share another poem, please?
Of course. So here it goes. Food is not the enemy. Society is. I know this one is very short, but it really spoke to me because, again, like we spoke about eating disorders, most of us have faced it or know people who suffer from eating disorders. So this one really spoke to me because it says that food is not the enemy. You know, eating is not a bad thing. Gaining weight is not a bad thing. It is society that is the enemy in the sense that they are in the wrong for, you know, putting these ideas into your head.
Yeah. Yeah, and to me, like, there are two different problems. Like, there is something to be said about, you know, just in modern times, our food is being processed and we're putting chemicals in our food that just wasn't there a century ago. Like, so generally thinking about those things, you know, is important. But again, you know, the whole media perpetuates a very unhealthy and very unrealistic form of what a healthy human body looks like. And that's just not the case. Like, I know someone who was overweight, but then he lost a lot of weight. But the way I know he lost a lot of weight was that he stopped eating and started smoking a lot, and that's not healthy.
No, it's not. Definitely,
Yeah.
because the media really associates skinny with healthy, and that's not always the case. So I do understand that the media is trying to promote healthy lifestyles, but they have really taken it overboard in the sense that now skinny equals healthy and overweight equals unhealthy. So that's definitely not the case.
And it's also, again, because it didn't always used to be like that. Like, even like a century, like centuries earlier, the typical, like, you'll see even ancient statues of like Aphrodite, the goddess of love. Like, she had stomach folds. Like, this super, super thin is a very new standard. And to me, it's not so much, again, it's not about health. It's more, in a sense, to me, it's like an elitist thing. It's like, you know, in the past, a sign of wealth was if you were like had more weight, and that meant you had more food like available to you. And so that was considered a sign of beauty and a sign of wealth. Whereas I feel like the opposite is true in modern times, where if you're super skinny, that shows a sign of class or higher class because you have the time, you have the leisure time to devote to exercising excessively.
Definitely, the concept of classes also plays into this.
Alrighty then, so here, let me pick my last one. This was on page 120 of the collection here. Okay. Wishing upon every shooting star isn't the way your dreams will come true. Taking your fate into your own hands is how your dreams will come true. So work hard, work harder, work even harder. And this poem is called Make It Happen.
Okay, before we discuss it, I want to know, do you wish on shooting stars?
Not necessarily on shooting stars. I am a pagan, so like I do like actual rituals with the moon, but that's a whole different matter entirely. I wouldn't say I wish upon stars in like that sort of traditional sense, if you will. No, I like
Okay.
it. I like it just because, again, it's showing like women, the whole gender dichotomy of men are supposed to be active and women are supposed to be passive. And
I see that.
yeah, and so, again, in tying it back to Cinderella, like, a lot of people criticize her for being very passive. But again, you know, I dispute that because, again, she was in a very difficult situation. And to me, like, when she goes, again, this whole how you interpret like the intervention of the fairy godmother, is that like her taking life into her own hands, or is that her being passive or whatever? So yeah, like, but definitely, you know, too many people, you know, want their lives to change and are complaining, and you know that, but they don't do anything actively to try and change their circumstances. And that's something I've always like worked on. It was like, okay, I'm not happy in this specific fear. What can I physically or emotionally do to make this better, to make this the way I want it to be?
Yeah, I definitely agree because we all have dreams and some of us just don't work for them. We just expect them to happen. We wish on shooting stars, using a metaphor that the Amanda Lovelace has. However, it is very important that we also work for our dreams because, most of us aren't just given what we want. We've got to work for it.
All righty then, would you like to read your last poem you picked, please?
Of course. We are the generation you gave participant trophies to. We are the generation you made wear helmets, elbow pads, and knee pads. We are the generation you gave censored CDs and PG movies to. We are the generation you spent years overprotecting, then threw to the wolves. Now we are the generation running on nothing but coffee and 3 hours of sleep. We are the generation working minimum wage jobs with college degrees. We are the generation making just enough money to survive. We are the generation you didn't want to see fail, then ensured that we did. It's called millennials.
Interesting. You know, I like it. It is a bit of a stereotype, and of course, not all millennials of my generation fall into this category. But there is something to be said about, you know, there was a certain trend of, you know, the way people you know, the way parents were emotionally distant and sometimes negligent of raising their children in the 50s and 60s. And that was the baby boomer generation. And so their kids, those in Generation X and millennials, they did the opposite, where it's like, I don't want my child to feel neglected the way I felt neglected. And so they've gone into the opposite direction, and thus we get helicopter parenting, which has created its own sort of problems.
Definitely, I agree. I am not a millennial. I fall into the Gen Z. But I see where she's coming from, because growing up, we're so protected and kept safe from everything. And then when we, you know, go out into the real world, it comes as a slap across our face because, you know, we've been protected all our lives. And it would be so much easier for all of us as children to be raised with, you know, not obviously, I don't mean that children should be exposed to every bad thing in the world, but some of it, definitely, because when it hits us, when we go out into the real world, it really hits us really hard, and we just don't know what to do. We feel lost. And yeah, that's what I think of it.
Yeah, no, and I can relate to that, because actually I grew up in a very sheltered environment, but not, it wasn't just like my parents, like the whole culture of like the town where I went to high school, like all the students were very like mature and like very nice and like just very academically oriented. And so it was really fun and really great. And but that means when I went to college, like across the country, and was with a whole bunch of new people, not everyone was like that. And I had to learn that, oh, some people are actually bad.
Mm-hmm, yeah. See, it really hits us, because we grow up so overprotected, and then, like Amanda says, then threw to the wolves. So it does get really difficult to deal with that.
Yeah, and like I remember my father really wanted me to go to a only girl school.
Oh,
because
he
thought like he thought that just going to a girls only school, that they would like take care of me better. And I remember like fighting that, because at some level I knew I was sheltered, and I just, you know, basically told my parents like, the world isn't gonna take care of me. I need to learn to take care of me.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah, I relate to that, because I understand the protection that comes, especially with gender segregation. I go to a segregated school, and I genuinely hate segregated schools and all of that, because then you grow up without talking to the opposite gender. And then when you have to in the workplace or outside, you know, you have no social skills at all. So I think it's very important that parents, to some extent, let their children out into the real world, because doing it too suddenly can be very scary.
Yeah, and that was basically my dad's position. He was someone who felt like, you know, there are studies that, you know, in gender segregated schools, like their academic scores are a lot higher because they're not. And I'm like, yeah, that may be true, but like academic stuff is important, but that's not the only element of life. They do need to know how to socialize with each
Definitely.
Other, otherwise. Otherwise, it's going to be a disaster, and they're just going to look really childish when they get older.
Yeah, I completely understand, because I spent a year in a segregated school, and the second I got out of it, I had no idea how to talk to boys, and I just feel that could have been easily avoided if they just let me go to a co-ed school.
And I think, and that's especially important, again, in your formative, like, teenage years, to be able to speak, like, you know, like, gender segregation just, like, increases the level of, like, fantasy of, ooh, the opposite sex is, like, this whole different alien magical species, and it's like, no, they're not.
Definitely, I completely agree with you.
Alrighty then. Well, thank you so much. I think we had a wonderful talk exploring those themes of her poems, and now we can move on to, so I have a little here, a little criticism of Amanda Lovelace's poetry. So I will read it aloud, and then we can talk about whether we agree with it or not.
Okay.
So I believe this was like a 1 or 2 star Amazon review for one of her collections. So here we go. Craving for a fix of angsty, superficially deep Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram-esque poetry? Check out Amanda Lovelace's work, The Mermaid Voice Returns, in this one. It's the third poetry collection in Lovelace's Women Are Some Kind of Magic series, following The Princess Saves Herself and The Witch Doesn't Burn, in this one, all of which attempt to spin classic fairy tale imagery and tropes into modern messages of female empowerment. Lovelace's project of portraying women as resilient and powerful is a noble one, and her personal experiences with various internal and external struggles that inspired her writing should not be criticized themselves, but The Mermaid's Voice Returns, in this one, is a lackluster body of poetic work. In truth, The Mermaid's Voice Returns sets lofty ambitions for tackling complex subject matter, but ultimately fails to achieve them with brief, choppy poems that disguise their lack of substance behind quirky lines, breaks in language so prettily vague that it parades as true depth.
Okay, I actually haven't read the book, but I don't think I completely agree with that, because there was something about, you know, her use of quirky lines, but that's not true, because a lot of Amanda Lovelace's work that I've read has been very new to me, and it's you know, shown me that some certain groups have had representation through her. So no, I don't completely agree with that review.
Yeah, and you know, there are some criticisms. Like, if you want to, you can criticize maybe InstaPoets about, you know, their lack of sophisticated word choice, or like maybe the brevity, how short their poems are. But in Amanda Lovelace, like specifically, like I know of other InstaPoets where their line breaks and their stanzas make no sense whatsoever. So for me, actually, Amanda Lovelace is like the way she breaks apart the stanzas makes perfectly good sense to me. At least it does in Break Your Glass Slippers.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, and again, these are like the like typical criticisms that are thrown at InstaPoets in general, that, you know, they're trying to be deep when they're not. And I think what do we classify as deep? It varies from person to person. And again, I think it's the fact that, again, that these type of poems are resonating with so many millions of women, I think that speaks to the fact that it has some depth in some sort of sense. And if we want to say, let's say for argument's sake, that these themes and the way she's InstaPoets are expressing these themes are not deep, then what does it say about our society that we still haven't evolved enough in terms of women's rights that, you know, just these sort of quote unquote simple poems give so much comfort because women are still having to deal with all these problems?
Definitely, because if you think that her talking about women's rights and about how the toxic fairy tales need to be denounced, if you think that's not deep, then maybe you're just too clouded from these things and you can't really see these things happen in everyday society. So I guess.
Yeah, it's, again, you know, again, there are some, again, Amanda Lovelace isn't my absolute favorite. Like, there are others like Nikita Gill and some others who use the same like fairy tale themes, but I think do it more like artistically with like certain word choice and ever. But still, again, I would not completely dismiss, you know, Amanda Lovelace as just being the typical one, because she is, along with Rupi Kaur, one of the more famous ones of the female poets.
Mm-hmm, yeah, but I actually really like her concept of fairy tales and magic, because it's something new, it's something I haven't read before. So I actually really like it. It's interesting.
Yeah. Alrighty then. Well, thank you so much for that. And now let's move on to a more uplifting exercise, which is hashtag InstaPoetry.
Let's do it.
So, do you have your phone handy?
I do, yes.
Okay. So if you just open up Instagram.
Okay.
And go and search for the hashtag InstaPoetry.
Okay, done.
Okay, so let me do mine. Yes. And again, you don't have to pick the very first one. You can just browse through and find one that kind of sticks out to you. Here, I'll pick one.
Okay.
This one is called Phyrocardia. Some days I'm healing, some days I break again.
That's very interesting. That really speaks to me, because I do understand that even when you're trying to heal or recover from, you know, a certain event or whatever it is that you're trying to heal from, there are days that, you know, healing is going really, really well and you feel that, you know, you might just be able to recover again. But there are days, obviously, that you can't get out of bed and you question whether recovery really is for you or not. And I've been there. I've had those bad days during periods of healing. So I definitely relate to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like it because, again, it's very true that, you know, I think a lot of people don't fully appreciate that. Like, when you're healing from something, again, whether it's, again, something more spiritual or emotional, or maybe something very physical and tangible, like addiction, like, relapses are a natural part of the healing process. And I think we don't talk about that enough.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Okay. So, yeah. So, just pick one at random that speaks to you, and then you can read it, and we'll talk about it.
Okay, so this one is unnamed. It's called, here it goes. It still sends a chill down my spine, knowing the way someone you love can change into someone you don't know anymore.
Yes. Yes, I see it too, from S.L. Gray.
Yeah.
Yes. Again, it's, you know, I'm a huge fan of, like, gothic literature and ghost stories, and I think a part of what, like, I love that genre so much is because, you know, I've dealt with those people who, like, betray you, and they're suddenly, they, like, wish have ill intent towards you, and that's, like, pretty terrifying.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. This just speaks to me because I know that sometimes people change, friends change, or family members, and then you just don't know who they are anymore. It's just not the person that you loved.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here, let me find one. So, this one's from Outlaw Poets. She understands life in a way I only dream I could, so I dream about her.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like, again, it seems simple, but I like the idea of, like, only she can do what I can dream of, so I dream about her instead of life itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Oh, do you hear that? My cat is snoring so softly beside me.
You have a cat, lucky.
Oh, yeah, she's so cute. Anyway, so yeah, would you like to pick another one, please?
Okay, so here it goes. And be gentle, because chances are someone's going to need it. Some may appear healed when underneath they're bleeding. So I think this is just another one of those, be kind because you don't know what people are going through. And I think it really applies because I know a lot of people who just throw rude comments, hateful comments at everyone they see. And you just never know the impact that they're going to have on other people, which is why we should always try and be kind to people.
Yes, I definitely can relate to that because I always think about, again, I don't know what's going on in someone else's life, and I would hate to be that one person that, like, ruins someone's, like, day or week because who knows, this is the last bad thing I have to deal with, and it's just miserable.
Exactly, I agree with you.
So let me try and find another one. Stop snoring, Santipe, God.
Oh, I hear her.
Her snores are so adorable. Okay, here's another one.
Okay.
Be wild, be spontaneous. Dance barefoot in the rain. Dare to buy a plane ticket on a Monday morning on a moment's notice. Spend the next 4 months living wildly free days, reworking your resume.
Oh, I really love that one. I think it's just all about spontaneity, and you just never know when. You never know how long you have, so it's important to just live in the moment and do what you want to do.
Yeah, definitely. I like the sentiment of, again, you know, life is short, you know, make sure to have fun. I don't know if I wholly agree with the very literal sense of my just natural financially conservative brain is just like, no, I'm not going to spend $1,000.
I understand,
On a plane ticket, maybe another metaphor would have been better. But all right, then would you like to share one more, please?
Okay, so here goes. The worst thing about loving you wasn't you leaving. It was hoping you'd come back. What do you think?
Again, I would have liked it to be a little more artistic and stylistic, but, you know, I totally get that sentiment. I got to a very unhealthy place in a breakup once where the only thing that brought me comfort was, like, trying to, like, how do I get this person back? And that was just, like, totally unhealthy, downward spiral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I've broken friendships, so I know what it's like to just have this idea in your head that they'll come back, but that's not healthy because you've got to learn to move on, I guess.
Alrighty then, and that concludes this week's episode of Insta Poetic Justice. Thank you so much for joining me, Efreen.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, and again, tune in next time, listeners. Again, don't forget to check out Efreen's works at Writing by AA on Instagram, and tune in next time, and we'll listen to another poet about another Insta poetic giant. Talk to you later, guys. Bye.